Chapter 3. Captain Servadac and his orderly, at the time of which I write, there might be seen in the registers of the Minister of War the following entry. Servadac, Hector, born at St. Trilady in the district of Lesper, Department of the Gironde, July 19, 18. Property. 1,200 francs in rents. Length of service. 14 years, 3 months, and 5 days. Service. 2 years at school at St. Sir, 2 years at Leckold Application, 2 years in the 8th Regiment of the Line, 2 years in the 3rd Light Cavalry, 7 years in Algeria. Campaigns. Southern and Japan. Rank. Captain on the staff at Mistaganem. Decorations. Chevalier of the Legion of Honor, March 13, 18. Hector Servadac was 30 years of age, an orphan without lineage and almost without means. Thirsting for glory, rather than for gold, slightly scatterbrained, but warm-hearted, generous, and brave, he was eminently formed to be the protege of the god of battles. For the first year and a half of his existence he had been the foster child of the sturdy wife of a vine-dresser of medicolineal descendant of the heroes of ancient prowess. In a word, he was one of those individuals whom nature seems to have predestined for remarkable things, and around whose cradle have hovered the fairy godmothers of adventure and good luck. In appearance Hector Servadac was quite the type of an officer. He was rather more than 5 feet 6 inches high, slim and graceful, with dark curling hair and mustaches, well-formed hands and feet, and a clear blue eye. He seemed born to please without being conscious of the power he possessed. It must be owned, and no one was more ready to confess it than himself, that his literary attainments were by no means of a high order. "We don't spin tops" is a favorite saying amongst artillery officers, indicating that they do not shirk their duty by frivolous pursuits. But it must be confessed that Servadac, being naturally idle, was very much given to pinning tops. His good abilities, however, and his ready intelligence had carried him successfully through the curriculum of his early career. He was a good draftsman, an excellent writer, having thoroughly mastered the successor to the famous Gleetom at the Writing School of St. Sir, and in the records of his military service his name had several times been included in the order of the day. The following episode may suffice, in a certain degree, to illustrate his character. Once, in action, he was leading a detachment of infantry through an entrenchment. They came to a place, where the side work of the trench had been so riddled by shell that a portion of it had actually fallen in, leaving an aperture quite unsheltered from the grape shot that was pouring in thick and fast. The men hesitated. In an instant Servadac mounted the side work, laid himself down in the gap, and thus filling up the breach by his own body, shouted, "March on!" And through a storm of shot, not one of which touched the prostrate officer, the troop passed in safety. Since leaving the military college, Servadac, with the exception of his 2 campaigns, in the Southern and Japan, had been always stationed in Algeria. He had now a staff appointment at Mistaganem, and had lately been entrusted with some topographical work on the coast between Tinnes and the Shelif. It was a matter of little consequence to him that the Gerby, in which of necessity he was quartered, was uncomfortable and ill-contrived. He loved the open air, and the independence of his life suited him well. Sometimes he would wander on foot upon the sandy shore, and sometimes he would enjoy a ride along the summit of the cliff, altogether being in no hurry at all to bring his task to an end. His occupation, moreover, was not so engrossing, but that he could find leisure for taking a short railway journey once or twice a week, so that he was ever and again putting in an appearance at the general's receptions at Oran, and at the fetes given by the governor at Algiers. It was on one of these occasions that he had first met Madame de L, the lady to whom he was desirous of dedicating the rondo, the first 4 lines of which had just seen the light. She was a colonel's widow, young and handsome, very reserved, not to say haughty in her manner, and either indifferent or impervious to the admiration which she inspired. Captain Servadac had not yet ventured to declare his attachment. Of rivals he was well aware he had not a few, and amongst these not the least formidable was the Russian Count Timascheff. And although the young widow was all unconscious of the share he had in the matter, it was she, and she alone, who was the cause of the challenge just given and accepted by her two ardent admirers. During his residence in the Gerby, Hector Servadac's sole companion was his orderly, Ben Zouf. Ben Zouf was devoted, body and soul, to his superior officer. His own personal ambition was so entirely absorbed in his master's welfare, that it is certain no offer of promotion, even had it been that of aide-de-camp to the governor-general of Algiers, would have induced him to quit that master's service. His name might seem to imply that he was a native of Algeria, but such was by no means the case. His true name was Laurent. He was a native of Montmartre in Paris, and how or why he had obtained his patronymic was one of those anomalies which the most sagacious of etymologists would find it hard to explain. Born on the hill of Montmartre, between the Solferino Tower and the mill of La Galette, Ben Zouf had ever possessed the most unreserved admiration for his birthplace, and to his eyes the heights and district of Montmartre represented an epitome of all the wonders of the world. In all his travels, and these had been not a few, he had never beheld scenery which could compete with that of his native home. No cathedral, not even Burgos itself, could vie with the church at Montmartre. Its racecourse could well hold its own against that at Pentelique. Its reservoir would throw the Mediterranean into the shade. Its forests had flourished long before the invasion of the Celts, and its very mill produced no ordinary flour, but provided material for cakes of worldwide renown. To crown all, Montmartre boasted a mountain, a veritable mountain. Envious tongues indeed might pronounce it little more than a hill, but Ben Zouf would have allowed himself to be hewn in pieces, rather than admit that it was anything less than 15,000 feet in height. Ben Zouf's most ambitious desire was to induce the captain to go with him, and end his days in his much-loved home, and so incessantly were Servadac's ears besieged with descriptions of the unparalleled beauties and advantages of this 18th arrondissement of Paris, that he could scarcely hear the name of Montmartre without a conscious thrill of aversion. Ben Zouf, however, did not despair of ultimately converting the captain, and meanwhile had resolved never to leave him. When a private in the 8th Cavalry, he had been on the point of quitting the army at 28 years of age, but unexpectedly he had been appointed orderly to Captain Servadac. Side by side they fought in two campaigns. Servadac had saved Ben Zouf's life in Japan. Ben Zouf had rendered his master a like service in the Soudan. The bond of union thus effected could never be severed, and although Ben Zouf's achievements had fairly earned him the right of retirement, he firmly declined all honors or any pension that might part him from his superior officer. Two stout arms, an iron constitution, a powerful frame, and an indomitable courage were all loyally devoted to his master's service, unfairly entitled him to his, so I Dyson, designation of the Rampart of Montmartre. Unlike his master, he made no pretension to any gift of poetic power, but his inexhaustible memory made him a living encyclopedia, and for his stock of anecdotes and troopers' tales he was matchless. Thoroughly appreciating his servant's good qualities, Captain Servadac endured with imperturbable good humor those idiosyncrasies, which in a less faithful follower would have been intolerable, and from time to time he would drop a word of sympathy that served to deepen his subordinate's devotion. On one occasion, when Ben Zouf had mounted his hobby horse, and was indulging in high-flown praises about his beloved 18th arrondissement, the captain had remarked gravely, "Do you know, Ben Zouf, that Montmartre only requires a matter of some 13,000 feet, to make it as high as Mont Blanc?" Ben Zouf's eyes glistened with delight, and from that moment Hector Servadac and Montmartre held equal places in his affection. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.